Good morning. It's good to see each of you this morning. It's a beautiful Lord's Day to be together, a little chilly, but beautiful time to be together. And we're picking up in the book of Judges. So if you have your Bibles, please turn with me there to Judges. And on Wednesday evening, we began a study of Judges chapter 9. We are about halfway through that chapter, and we kind of had to break that in a difficult spot, I guess you could say. Ideally, we would go all the way through that section, but there's a lot of material there. And so we're going to be picking up in Judges chapter 9 this morning. If you weren't with us on Wednesday night, just a couple things that I think we need to review before we head in. We discussed at the end of chapter 8 that as soon as Gideon passed away, the people of Israel fell back into worshiping idols. It follows that same pattern we've seen throughout the book of Judges, where afterwards, after a judge passes away, they fall back into idolatry and they leave God. Not only did they forget the Lord and forget what God had done for them, they also forgot what Gideon had done, and they show no respect to Gideon's household whatsoever. We do know that Abimelech is the son specifically mentioned quite a bit at the end of chapter 8 and all through chapter 9, and he is the son that Gideon had with a concubine from Shechem. And he is, I guess you could say, a power-hungry individual in many ways as you read this chapter, a brutal tyrant of a person. We can think of people in world history that you would put in the same, I think, category as Abimelech. But he was determined to lead Israel by any means necessary. And so he approached his mother's relatives who lived in Shechem. He was from Shechem himself. He says two things to them. He says, you know, do you want 70 men ruling over you or do you want one? And so they're like, well, I'd rather have one. Well, if you're going to have one person, who should it be? It should be a relative, right? I'm your flesh and blood. And so Abimelech has a selling point to them where they're like, well, you're right. I think we would rather have, you know, somebody who's a relative. So they go to the leaders of Shechem, and they end up making Abimelech their leader and their king. We also know that 70 pieces of silver were given to him from the temple of Baal-Berith. He takes the 70 pieces of silver. He goes and hires some worthless men to kind of be almost like, I guess you could say, like a bunch of bandits with him practically. And what he does after that is he travels to Orphah. And there, he kills his 70 brothers. It's specifically stated that he kills his 70 brothers on one stone. And then the only son that escapes that, the only son of Gideon, is Jotham. And he is the youngest son of Gideon. And from there, Jotham escapes to Mount Gerizim, and Abimelech is made the king of Shechem. We do know that Jotham, once he gets to Mount Gerizim, that he issues a curse on the people, or I should say on the people of Shechem, the men of Shechem who put him as king, but he also curses Abimelech. And we discussed Wednesday night this very interesting analogy that he uses concerning trees. He talks about the trees going out searching for a king, and as they're going out searching for a king, they go to the olive tree, the fig tree, they go to the vine, and all of them turn down this position. They don't want to be the king. And so the trees, which are the men of Shechem, are going to these different trees looking for a king. Eventually, they end up asking the bramble to be their king. And we discussed how the bramble is representing Abimelech. And bramble is this worthless, thorny thing, this bush. And it becomes the king. With that, though, he adds some curses. And one of the curses that he states in verse 15 of chapter 9 is, "May fire come out from the bramble and consume the cedars of Lebanon." Practically saying, may fire come out from Abimelech and curse the people of Shechem. But also, the curse goes the other way. In Judges chapter 9, beginning in verse 19, that curse continues with, "If you have dealt with truth and integrity with Jerubbaal and his house this day, rejoice in Abimelech and let him rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and consume the men of Shechem and Beth Millo, and let fire come out from the men of Shechem and from Beth Millo and consume Abimelech." So the curse is twofold, that he's saying, may Abimelech curse the men of Shechem, and may they consume each other, and then the men of Shechem consume Abimelech for what they've done here in their wickedness. Also, we read, this is what we were discussing right before we left on Wednesday night, that God sent an evil spirit. This statement is made in verse 23 where it says, "Now Abimelech ruled over Israel 3 years. Then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem." Some translations there read that God sent a spirit of ill will, which is probably more appropriate and makes more sense to us. So there is this wedge that is now driven between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. And throughout the rest of the chapter, for the most part, you see that wedge just getting driven farther and farther down, where they are going to completely tear apart and eventually consume each other. At this point, that spirit of ill will goes between them, and the men of Shechem actually set an ambush in the mountains. They deal treacherously with Abimelech, and they set men in ambush on the top of the mountains and cause some discord between, obviously, the men of Shechem and Abimelech. This is the section of text that we were reading before we were dismissed on Wednesday night, so I'll reread that. It's Judges chapter 9, beginning in verse 26. "Now Gaal the son of Ebed came with his relatives and crossed over into Shechem, and the men of Shechem put their trust in him. They went out to the fields and gathered the grapes of their vineyards and trod them and held a festival. And they went into the house of their God and ate and drank and cursed Abimelech. Then Gaal the son of Ebed said, 'Who is Abimelech and who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal, and is Zebul not his lieutenant? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, but why should we serve him? Would therefore that this people were under my authority, then I would remove Abimelech.' And he said to Abimelech, 'Increase your army and come out.'" Verse 30, "When Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger burned. He sent messengers to Abimelech deceitfully, saying, 'Behold, Gaal the son of Ebed and his relatives have come to Shechem, and behold, they are stirring up the city against you. Now therefore, arise by night, you and the people who are with you, and lie await in the field. In the morning, as soon as the sun is up, you shall rise early and rush upon the city. And behold, when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you shall do to them whatever you can." So we left off here in the middle of chapter 9, and here in verse 23, we see that spirit of ill will that was sent from God getting into action a little bit more. Specifically, who is mentioned here, we talked about Gaal, the son of Ebed. And he gathers himself with the men of Shechem, and they cause this uprising. It says in some translations there's a festival, they're having a bit of a party, I guess you could say, and they're cursing Abimelech. Gaal is making very boastful and proud statements about, who is Abimelech? Why should we be serving him? If you chose me as your king, I would get rid of Abimelech. And then at the very end of that statement, if you look at verse 29, he calls Abimelech out. He says, "Abimelech and your army, come on out. Let's fight." So he's being very boastful in his statements here. Now, when Gaal makes these statements to the men of Shechem, Zebul, who is an officer for Abimelech, hears all this. And his anger burns when he hears this. And so he sends secretly for Abimelech and says, "All right, you have this situation over here. Abimelech, let me tell you about it. Why don't you go on and bring your men out?" And so they want to do this secretly to ambush Gaal and to ambush the people of Shechem who have done this. So these very brassy, bold claims concerning Abimelech are going to come to fruition in verse 34. And he's going to have to answer for what he's said here. But that spirit of ill will between God and the men of Shechem and Abimelech is about to happen here as far as him sending this spirit of ill will between them. All right, let's pick up, because this is a perfect connection with it, verse 34. "So Abimelech and all the people who were with him arose by night and lay in wait against Shechem in four companies. Now Gaal the son of Ebed went out and stood in the entrance of the gate, the city gate. And Abimelech and the people who were with him arose from the ambush. When Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, 'Look, people are coming down from the tops of the mountains.' But Zebul said to him, 'You are seeing the shadow of the mountains, as if they were men.' Gaal spoke again and said, 'Behold, people are coming down from the highest part of the land, and one company comes by the way of the diviner's oak.' Then Zebul said to him, 'Where is your boasting now, with which you said, "Who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Is this now not the people whom you have despised? Go out now and fight with them.' So Gaal went out before the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him. And many fell wounded up to the entrance of the gate. Then Abimelech remained at Arumah, and Zebul drove out Gaal and his relatives so that they could not remain in Shechem. So we see here that Abimelech gets this message from Zebul, and he answers the call. He divides his men into four companies, and they arrive, and they are lying in wait to ambush Gaal there at the gate of Shechem. And you can imagine here, Gaal is standing at the gate of Shechem. He's looking out. And I guess we've talked about this, the terrain of this, of mountains everywhere, right? And he's looking out and he sees men coming down from the mountains. Well, Zebul, who made this call to Abimelech secretly in the first place, is standing close by, it sounds like. And he says, men are coming down from the mountains. What's Zebul's response? It's just shadows. Now, we might be wondering, why did he do that? Maybe to delay his response, you know, to kind of downplay the situation, to delay his response so he can't go attack as quick. But he looks and he sees, again, the men are coming down. He mentions specifically the Diviner's Oak. He sees these different companies. And so they're being attacked. And so at that point, Zebul says, aren't you the one who said, who is Abimelech? All right, here you go. Hey, there he is. Go fight him. You said you can take out Abimelech. You can fight him. You can be victorious and be the king. Go. Go show us who's the boss, practically. I mean, this is a pretty bold situation here. So Gaal is having to eat his words. He goes out. How does it go for Gaal? Not good. He gets run off. It doesn't work well at all. And so the situation is not a good thing for Gaal. So he was very boastful. He's caught off guard, and he has to face Abimelech. So Gaal goes out, and he fights with Abimelech. Gaal flees from Abimelech. Many fell wounded at the gate of Shechem, so they suffer losses. But Zebul also gets involved here, and it says in verse 41 that Zebul drives out Gaal and his relatives so that they can no longer remain at Shechem. Now, from there, we really don't hear a whole lot more about Gaal at all. This uprising that Gaal caused, trying to elevate himself, really is squashed. And so that's the end of that. So Abimelech took care of it. Obviously, Zebul and his role in that took care of it. But Gaal, definitely, with his boastful words, it did not come to fruition. He could not back up his bold statements, that's for sure. All right? Now, let's look at verses 42 through 45. Now, it came about the next day that the people went out to the field, and it was told to Abimelech. And he took his people and divided them into three companies and lay in wait in the field. When he looked and saw the people coming out from the city, he arose against them and slew them. Then Abimelech and the company who was with him dashed forward and stood at the entrance of the city gate. The other two companies then dashed against all who were in the field and slew them. Abimelech fought against the city all that day, and he captured the city and killed the people who were in it. Then he razed the city and sowed it with salt. The very next day, which I think is interesting, the very next day after this uprising is squashed, Abimelech is again going to attack. And so the people of Shechem go out into the fields. And as they go out into the fields, Abimelech divides the people into three companies, and they begin to attack the people and kill them. We are told that Abimelech and his men fought against Shechem all day. They end up capturing the city of Shechem, and they killed the people of the city. So this alliance that we read of in those first several verses of chapter 9 has completely failed and just unraveled at this point. The men of Shechem and Abimelech, He has turned completely against them. They turned against him. He's turned against them. And now he is completely and utterly destroying the city of Shechem, the people who had even put him in power as king. So the men of Shechem were being consumed by Abimelech just as the curse of Jotham had revealed and as God had seen fit. An interesting statement here in verse 45 is that Abimelech razed the city and he sowed it with salt. That's an interesting statement. Why did he sow it with salt? What does that mean? Kill all the vegetation and everything. When I was looking up some historical facts about this, there's a city called Carthage that the Romans overtook. And for a long time, historians believe that they actually sowed the city with salt and just utterly destroyed it, razed the city, and then sowed it with salt. Over the last several years, they have dispelled that. A lot of people don't believe that they actually sowed it with salt. But the greatest example of a city being sowed with salt is actually the one we read right here of Abimelech doing this to Shechem. A really great resource I found here, a really great statement I thought that's interesting to read is from this website. It's BibleReference.com website. But it reads, "In a final act of spite and symbolism, Abimelech sows the city with salt. Contaminating fields with massive quantities of salt was a tactic used in ancient times. This was meant to ruin the land's ability to support crops. Eventually, the salted soil would recover, but not before bringing ruin to anyone depending on it for food. Salt was also used as a symbol of agreements and covenants. Scattering salt in and around Shechem may have been a symbolic act to declare that this city would never rise again. Whatever Abimelech does is effective. The city was empty and barren for almost 200 years, rebuilt during the time of Jeroboam." So you think about this city being sowed with salt, that he would utterly destroy the city. It's completely decimated. He's killed the people of the city. There are some people still remaining we'll read of in this next portion of verses. But at this point, it's the utter destruction is pretty terrible and catastrophic. Then to go another level and say, "I'm going to sow it with salt." He doesn't want anyone ever to live here again. I mean, that's really what he's doing. He is killing any chance of vegetation. And many people say that it was another 100 to 200 years before Shechem could recover from this and even be rebuilt. So Abimelech is a ruthless individual. If we didn't know that already, we're seeing just more and more to add to the list of this person who is on just a power trip, I think you could say, of just wickedness. Is there any comments or anything you all would like to add here? Now, the destruction of Shechem continues. Right here, there are some people who have taken refuge in a certain area of the city. Let's begin in verse 46. In verse 46, we read, "When all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem heard it, they entered the inner chamber of the temple of El-Berith. It was told Abimelech that all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together. So Abimelech went up to Mount Zalmon, he and all the people who were with him. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand, and cut down a branch from the trees, and lifted it and laid it on his shoulder. Then he said to the people who were with him, 'What you have seen me do, hurry and do likewise.' All the people also cut down, each one his branch, and followed Abimelech, put them on the inner chamber, and set the inner chamber on fire over those inside, so that all the men of the Tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women." So in the process of him utterly razing Shechem, this city that he has turned against, you have the leaders of the Tower of Shechem that go into the inner chambers of the temple or house of this false god El-Berith. Now, ironically, this seems to be the same house or the same temple of El-Berith that we read about back in verse 4. Back in verse 4 of chapter 9, remember how Abimelech, when he was king, became king or leader? Well, he was going to be their leader, I should say. He received 70 pieces of silver from the temple of El-Berith, or from the house of El-Berith. So now, instead of it being a joyful occasion of him being king, he's going to destroy it also and destroy the people inside. It's interesting to consider how he is killing the people who made him leader. He is killing ruthlessly, possibly even his mother's relatives here, the ones that went to bat for him at the very beginning for him to be the leader. So Abimelech received word that the leaders are gathered together, and Abimelech takes his men to Mount Zalmon. When they get to this mountain, he begins to chop down trees and branches, and he's carrying them, and he tells the men to do the same thing, to chop down branches, put them on their arms, start carrying them. They take all these pieces of wood, they put them on this fortified chamber, and they light it with fire. And it's an amazing amount of people that he kills in this instance. He kills 1,000 men and women of Shechem. Again, the ruthless behavior is shown of Abimelech. But again, I think we can all say, why is all this happening in the first place? I mean, it's sin, that's right. But if you remember, what's really at the root of all of it? Israel had turned their back on God. Israel had gone to false gods. And Abimelech, a bramble, is able to do some terrible things during this time. A part of Jotham's curse had come to pass, and it comes to pass in a very specific way. May the fire come out from the bramble and consume the cedars of Lebanon was a curse that we read just a few minutes ago in verse 15. And here we see fire actually coming forth from Abimelech to destroy the leaders of this temple in Shechem. Also, this other statement here of the curse, let fire come out from Abimelech and consume the men of Shechem and Beth Millo. So Abimelech killed without mercy. He's killing the people who made him king in the first place. And now that Shechem had received their punishment for strengthening the arm of Abimelech, it's now time for Abimelech to receive his due. Up to this point, the second part of the curse has not been fulfilled. The men of Shechem have been utterly destroyed, who supported this uprising in the first place and made him king. But what's going to happen as far as Abimelech and his punishment, we will read. Does anyone have any comments up to this point? Okay. Let's look at verse 50. Then Abimelech went to Thebes, and he camped against Thebes and captured it. But there was a strong tower in the center of the city. And all the men and women, with all the leaders of the city, fled there and shut themselves in, and they went up on the roof of the tower. So Abimelech came to the tower and fought against it and approached the entrance of the tower to burn it with fire. But a certain woman threw an upper millstone on Abimelech's head, crushing his skull. Then he called quickly to the young man, his armor-bearer, and said to him, "Draw your sword and kill me, so that it will not be said of me, a woman slew him." So the young man pierced him through, and he died. When the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, each departed to his home. Thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father in killing his 70 brothers. Also God returned all the wickedness of the men of Shechem on their heads, and the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal, came upon them. Some very interesting statements here. After destroying and ruthlessly taking out, I guess you could say, the city of Shechem, raising the city, sowing it with salt, he's not done there. Where he goes next is he goes to Thebes. I'm going to show you this on the map, and then I can come back. But you can see Shechem is located right here, practically between Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. Thebes is located just a little bit here to the northeast. Does it say anything about why he's attacking this town? No. Some suppose that maybe it was because they weren't going along with Abimelech, or there was some kind of uprising possibly there. We don't know. We don't know why he specifically is attacking this city. But the tactics that he uses here is very similar to what he did with Shechem just a few moments before. Many people here are gathered in the city of Thebes, and they gather to a very large tower, it says, that's located in the middle of the city or the center of the city. Abimelech begins to use this similar strategy of using fire to try to destroy this structure. So what happens here is that he is close to the tower, close enough, so that a certain woman, and I think it's interesting that it says a certain woman, it doesn't give credit to the woman like we read a few chapters back about Jael, specifically mentioning her by name. The name of this woman is omitted from Scripture, but a certain woman takes an upper millstone and throws it from the top of this tower, or from the tower, I should say, and it hits Abimelech in the head and crushes his skull. Now, what is an upper millstone? That's a good point. I hadn't thought about it that way. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, every picture you look at of an upper millstone is substantial. It's one of those things that you just look at and you're like, wow, that is a huge rock. And the King James Version, I believe, says that it was a portion or a part of the upper millstone or a part of the millstone. Regardless, this is a very substantial rock that is flying down from the tower, and it hits him in the skull, causing severe damage, obviously. What's amazing is that he is conscious enough that he makes this comment and says, calls over his armor bearer and says, I don't want a woman to have killed me. Pierce me through. Like, kill me. I want to be killed by a man. Now, again, that kind of connects back to think about how did people revere Jael that we talked about? We talked about back in the story of, let's go back, sorry. I'm going to skip around a little bit. We talked back when we were talking about Sisera, and we talked about Jael. Remember Judges chapter 5, verse 24, most blessed of women is Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. Most blessed is she of women of the tent, because she took a tent peg and drove it through the skull of Sisera. How did it look in the eyes of soldiers when a woman killed a man? It sounds like it was like, oh, yeah, it was very much frowned upon. And so at this point, he says, you do it. You kill me. And so the armor bearer is willing to do that. And he finishes, I guess you could say, finishes him off and kills Abimelech. I think it's also interesting to think about here what happens to all the people that are with Abimelech once he is killed. Go home. I just think that's amazing. You have all this uprising. We're just going through and we're just demolishing Shechem and raising it with salt. And we're doing all these violent, violent things. And then when the head is destroyed, everything just, all right, I guess we'll go home now. And that's really what you see here. Is it's like they don't see the point in the fight. Because everything they were doing was so driven by this person who is just so wicked and just driven by his desires, I think, to be the leader and to do anything by any means to make himself elevated as king with great pride. And so the people scatter. His followers just go home. I think that's interesting that they each departed to his home in verse 55. In verses 56 and 57, it points out to us in Scripture that God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech back to him because he had killed his 70 brothers. We've talked about the brutality of that act and the violence of that act and how egregious that was. That Gideon had been such a man of God in so many ways in delivering Israel, and for his sons and his household to be treated this way, and for the conflict to come internally. The issue here with Israel was something from the inside. It wasn't an outside country that was trying to capture them or oppress them. And so God repays the wickedness on the men of Shechem for their involvement in making King Abimelech their king. So both parties have consumed each other practically in their wickedness. You have Shechem is utterly destroyed. You have Abimelech who is destroyed. And the curse of Jotham comes to pass. That last verse in verse 57. And God returned all the wickedness of the men of Shechem on their heads. And the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbabel, came upon them. How true it is that what Jotham had said at Mount Gerizim, cursing Abimelech, cursing Shechem, had come to pass because they had not dealt rightfully with Gideon's household and with the sons of Gideon. So they consumed each other, and in the midst of it all, they just left a wreck of devastation. That's what you see in Israel at this point. So in this chapter, think about this. Have we seen that cycle we talked about Wednesday night, or the cycle that Larry's been talking about? Did you see the cycle, the full cycle? Was there deliverance? Was there peace? No. Like, really what you saw consistently throughout this chapter, throughout the story of Abimelech, is you see sin and punishment. And that's why many do not revere at all Abimelech as being a judge. He is kind of a misnomer in the story. He is someone who caused this uprising within Israel. And he is not revered by many historians and many Christians to be someone who was a judge on the same level as Deborah or as Gideon or as Samson and the things that they did. This is a situation where rampant sin, rampant punishment was going on throughout Israel. Uh-huh.
God appointed the judges, Abimelech appointed himself.
That's right. That's right. And also I think God allowed Abimelech to do that because they had left him. They had forsaken him utterly. And so he practically was like, all right, you're going to sow your sin and you're going to continue in it. And that was the wickedness that would come forth and utter destruction. You're right. He elevated himself. That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Pax. That's right. It's an example today. And I think it's one of those statements of when people always question. You have people who won't come to Christ because they say, how can a true and just loving God allow individuals to carry out abortions? How can a God and true, just God allow a man like Hitler to reign? Or this tyrant over here and oppress the people and murder people? And all these terrible things happen in the world. How can God just sit and allow that to happen? And then you look at the Old Testament and you realize, oh, it's because of my sin and my wickedness and our sin and our wickedness that there's punishment, there's consequences. And we have to remember that. And these are here for our example. And you're exactly right about that. Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah, he's the closest thing you see to a judge in this chapter. That's right. There is one passage. Yeah, Larry, sorry. Uh-huh. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And then, as you think about today and Wednesday, we're studying about Abimelech, and Abimelech was the child of a concubine and seems to be a self-appointed leader. Mm-hmm. Right.
But that verse 22, Abimelech ruled over Israel for 3 years.
Yeah.
You just don't see in these verses how he affected all of the 12 tribes. You see him affecting the smaller.
Yeah. And practically, the only area you see him really having impact, at least scripturally, is right around where it's circled. I mean, it's these areas right here. And it makes you even wonder if even toward Thebes, if he wasn't, things weren't going well there, because that's where he attacks next, so he was going north. Yes, Gary? That's right. That's right. Yeah, everything turned from there drastically. Because of God's hand, that's right. There is one other passage in Scripture that retells the story of Abimelech and how this certain woman dropped an upper millstone. Does anyone know where it's found? Because I would not have found, I never knew it was located here, never thought of it this way. Does anyone know where it's located? This is kind of an interesting side note. It's retold in one other spot in Scripture.
2 Samuel.
Good job. The story of David and Bathsheba and Uriah the Hittite. If you'll turn over with me, it's 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 14. It's an interesting retelling here. 2 Samuel chapter 11 and verse 14. So this is after David has committed adultery with Bathsheba. And in verse 14 it reads, "Now in the morning David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. He had written in the letter saying, place Uriah in the front line of the fiercest battle and withdraw from him, so that he may be struck down and die. So it was, as Joab kept watch on the city, that he put Uriah at the place where he knew there were valiant men. The men of the city went out and fought against Joab, and some of the people among David's servants fell, and Uriah the Hittite also died. Then Joab sent and reported to David all the events of the war. He charged the messenger, saying, when you have finished telling all the events of the war to the king, and if it happens that the king's wrath arises and he says to you, why did you go so near to the city to fight? Did you not know that they would shoot from the wall? Who struck down Abimelech, the son of Jebusheth? Did not a woman throw an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died at Thebes? Why did you go so near the wall? Then you shall say to him, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. Interesting little side note, I think, there. So for years after this, people remembered the way Abimelech died. You don't get close to the wall, right? Don't get close to the wall in a battle. It's dangerous. And they knew that anyway. You'll have archers and people shooting from the wall. But what happens here is that Uriah has died, but also other men died in the battle. And so Joab tells the messenger, when you go back to the king, and you know, he's not happy about how things went because we lost men. We shouldn't have lost this many men possibly, right? And he says, why did you all get so close to the wall? Don't you know the story about Abimelech? Like, why would you do that? Then you're going to say, Uriah the Hittite died. And that will appease David because that was his goal all along, was to have Uriah the Hittite killed and put in the fiercest battle. So it's interesting that that little side note is there. It's the only other passage that retells or gives that account, I guess you could say, of Abimelech and this certain woman doing this act. Does anyone have any other comments you would like to add? Yeah, Doug? Right. It's God. That's right. All right. Well, thank you all very much. We'll begin in chapter 10 on Sunday or on Wednesday. All right. Thank you.